Okay, so we understand the need of transformation, physical transformation, and it cannot be done unless matter comes into play at some point, at some level. But then what is matter? And now Sri Aurobindo is explaining to us like a super scientist. These are not thought speculations. Thought speculations are based on calculations, understanding. We try to figure out what matter is. But these are Sri Aurobindo's own experiences. He has gone into the depths of matter by liberating the consciousness. So that's how, as he says, I entered into matter's alleys blind to her nether mysteries. This a line in A God's Labor, where he says, I saw that a falsehood was planted deep. So he has entered into matter. Both Sri Aurobindo and the mother have directly experienced what it contains, and they describe it also. Mother speaks of true matter, something now scientists are beginning to say, that what we know as matter is not really matter. The reality of matter is something else. She speaks of true matter. And how that matter is is so different in its mode of operations. Scientists, as I said, are drawing closer to the truth of matter. And if I have to summarize all the various theories and views, so at one level, one ends up saying matter doesn't exist probably except as a form of energy. Sounds strange. So, but very simple. This is a table, this is a glass, this is a human body and mic and everything. So what does science tell us? Physical science, hardcore physical science. What is it made up of? So it's made up of molecules. Molecules are made up of atoms. Atoms are made up of electrical charges. And electrical charges are held together by the forces. There are five forces: weak electromagnetic, strong electromagnetic, electrical force, static dynamic, and gravitational force. So ultimately, electrical energy and forces. So it creates a confusion. Can I act like that with this body? No, it's so real, so solid. And it's so solid that no amount of mental speculation can take away this solidity. So this is a paradox which scientists are facing. And they are trying to resolve it. And some scientists, Rupert Sheldrake is one of them, they've actually done very interesting experiments have been done, especially involving the eye, extra mission. Can the eyes not only see, but can they transmit? And he says, yes, there is enough evidence they can transmit. You know, that phenomena when somebody is watching you from behind and you get a feel. How do you get a feel? And you are right. So all these things are now coming into the realm of science. But one of them is very interesting, where a scientist says, no, consciousness is primary. Because it started with trying to study consciousness. And it's known as the hard problem of consciousness. That how, why there is consciousness at all. And slowly, slowly, starting from that point, that there is no consciousness except as an action of neurons and the brain box, scientists are actually saying consciousness is primary and atomic world is, and matter is secondary. So this much they have reached, which is a beautiful thing. They are yet to find the missing links, how it this becomes or that becomes this, and what are the connecting threads. But Sri Aurobindo reveals to us everything. How these threads are there, what are the connecting links, and probably some scientist one day will experiment or will be led towards it, because whatever he has discovered and left in the mental world as an imprint, somebody will catch it, will have some kind of experience of it. But to start with, scientists would say that matter is nothing else but a mode of energy. So we can understand it like this, that there is an energy which throws itself out in a whirlpool, if you like, and this constant throwing itself out, it creates a kind of form. Now this form is not a stable form, but because it is repeatedly, this movement is going on. That's why, in fact, he says, people say matter is dull or inert, which it is in its outer quality. But if you really go down, matter is constantly electron, proton, they are just whirling at what speed. So, just because this motion is so repetitive that it gives the sense of stability and endurance. There are very interesting things about it, that eyes cannot pick up something if the rate of change is constant. It doesn't understand the change. So, but why does it then appear as solid substance? So something else has to come into play, and that is the sense organs. So on one side, energy is throwing itself into whirls and patterns. On the other side, the mind is trying to reach out and catch it. So it develops these senses and it catches it. So senses cannot catch unless it becomes more and more gross and concrete to appearance. So at one level, that is the justification why this kind of concreteness has, the world has become. Because it gives the sense of something solid. Of course, inner experience, God is more concrete. But otherwise, from the evolutionary point of view, we want to hold something which is real. And it must be something very solid, tangible. The senses must be able to take it. So this is one part. Okay, fine. Mind, senses are involved. And what directs this energy? So that's where mind comes in. So philosophers say that consciousness has built matter. So that is also right. Mental consciousness, what it does, it's a consciousness which by its nature divides reality. Very simple to understand it. This hall is a totality. But if I have to see it and describe it, I will describe first what I am seeing in front. That's all the four heads of Brahma. Then I'll turn my head. Now I am seeing this side of the picture. Mind is a consciousness that divides. It cannot immediately conceive the whole. Then I'll turn to the left side and I'll see. Then I'll probably turn behind and then I'll make a picture. Mind does like that. It has to take the parts and piece them together. So mind conceives everything like that, and because the mind is acting upon that we have read earlier, from the supermind, the mind, and the mind's action on reality gives the sense of fragmentation. In other words, there is no real ultimate fragmentation, but it gives the sense of fragmentation. And it's so concrete, so real and tangible to the senses, mind has evolved to catch it. It's almost impossible mentally to negate it. Even if one knows, you cannot. So one has to treat it like that. So mind is the one which fragments. So which mind? Individual mind? Certainly not, because individual mind, matter exists much before human beings or any, even an animal mind came into existence. So one has to presuppose a cosmic mind which is operating, which turns an indivisible, undivided whole, akhand, into different portions. That's how this cosmic mind operates. So we can say that the cosmic mind itself would have two levels. At one level, where it is still knows, comprehends the indivisible whole. But at another level, where it starts acting upon creation, turned towards creation, and it changes it into small little fragments. Again, because of individuality, all that Shurubindra in detail will take us. It's a whole journey. And this is what is Maya, Avidyamay Maya and Vidyamay Maya. So this division is the root of ignorance. And where does it start? Right from the overmind level. Not in the highest level of overmind, but right there. How does it start? So Our mind is like a million godheads are released into this creation. And each godhead goes, builds his own time, space, reality, energy, substance, beings to fulfill itself. Each is allowed that freedom. At the highest, they know each other. But as they start coming down, they quarrel. Quarrel of the gods. Sometimes human beings have to suffer because of that. As it goes further and further, the result of this division, which was at some stage necessary, ultimately this ignorance becomes complete when it enters into inconscient, where the fragmentation is so extreme that you don't have portions and bits of reality, but infinitesimal points of reality. And Sri Aurobindo says, he has predicted this long back, you break the infinitesimal point, you will again have another infinitesimal point. So atom is not the end. You keep on breaking, you will keep on, because it's infinite. By its nature it is infinite. You can keep on breaking, keep on breaking, keep on breaking. If you have a means, and you will have still lower particle, still smaller particle, such particles which will just appear and vanish. All that you can say is possibly there is a particle. All of them are calculations ultimately. So that's how its extreme result is this. Extreme fragmentation. And the result of this fragmentation is that everything is so separate. And when the mind acts upon things, it cannot act with the sense of wholeness. It's just impossible. But, and here comes the catch. Where has mind come from? Mind has come from supermind. So wherever the mind has entered, supermind has also entered. So we read last time that supermind is the real idea determining. So mind has done a fragmentation. But each of these fragmentation is not just a random chaos. It has its destiny. It will come up. It will bring together. There will be atomic constituents. Different atoms. Why? Because behind them is the supermind as the determining real idea. So even in fragmentation, that truth is never lost. So you have forms which have already been foreseen at one level. That's the beauty. The supermind is foreseen. It has entered through the mind and it's once again going back toward. That's why actually if there is no supermind, there is no determining power. Then out of infinite God creating things, things should be randomly moving, coalescing, bumping. He's infinite. But there is something which orders them into arrangement. That power which orders them, as one of the very beautiful adjectives of the supermind is, marshals the rays. That's why we have Om Tat Savitur Varam Rupam Jyotihi Parasya Dhimahi. So, and Yajnavalk's prayer, it's so obvious. Hiranmayena Patrina Satyasyapihitam Mukham. It says that truth. O sun, that marshals your rays into creation. So, originally he has the control always. So, there is the play of ignorance. Behind it, there is supermind. And wherever there is supermind, there is Sachidananda. If this is abstract, there is a very simple other simile. So, you have anything one creates with the mind, maybe a painting. But something of the artist has gone into the painting. He knows its meaning and purpose because it's inevitable. And if the artist himself is a creation of the divine, so something of the divine, however distorted, has gone into it. It may be a distorted representation because that's how through the rungs creation comes. That's why the whole purpose of art is to align oneself with the divine and express. That's why Mother's paintings, I use the word spiritual realism, is of a very different kind. She's not creating symbolic pictures. She has got a real picture. You see the vase is there and some fruits are there on a table. It's a real picture. She is not creating abstract images. So what is it that she is bringing? One has to really go deep and they come alive with a consciousness. So strange. It's spiritual realism. She has poured that because she is identified with that truth and she is bringing. Look at the portrait she has made of each one. Some of these sadhaks, her own self-portrait, Sri Aurobindo. So always matter, wherever there is matter, there is mind. Wherever there is mind, there is supermind. Wherever there is supermind, there is Sachidanand. And it has entered into all of this. And therefore, matter is not a disconnected reality. It's almost like telling that this painting has nothing to do with the painter. Painter was asleep and somehow he made. Even if he made, that means his consciousness was active in some way. So, when we say that matter is something other than the divine, we are making a mistake. And that's why Sri Aurobindo says the ancient creeds were much more patient. And there's a beautiful story of Bhrigu and Varun or Varuni, where he asks, the father asks the son or the guru asks the disciple, or the disciple asks, what is the ultimate reality? He says, you meditate, tell me. Taittiriya Upanishad. So he comes after some time and says, Annam Brahmeti, matter is Brahman. So the Rishi does not reprimand him. This is what you understood. I have been trying to tell you that matter is nothing to do with the divine. But he says, okay, well done. Now go deeper. So he again comes back. Then he says, Pranam Brahmeti, life energy. See, this far scientists have reached. Because what is matter made up of? Worlds of energy. He says, good. Now you have cleared your secondary school. Come back. After more meditation, he comes back and then he says, there is something else which is the cause of these two. Consciousness has created. He says, very good. Vijnanam Brahmeti. He says, very good. Now there is something which is operating, which has created these energy walls, patterns, matter. He says, okay, find out, still go further. And then he makes that wonderful discovery. One of the greatest discoveries ever made. People ask, why is creation? Why is creation? Why is creation? It stares us in the face. Anandam Brahmeti. To house God's delight in things, this world was born. It's a tonic for the soul. Of course, we don't know that ananda, so it changes into pleasure, pain and indifference. Yet it is for delight. A secret bliss is at the root of things. There's a beautiful passage in Savitri where he says, in everything, you seek bliss. And he even goes on to say, man plucks bliss, the flower of bliss, the forbidden fruit from soil where he's not supposed to go because he's seeking that. So, Anandam Brahmeti. And therefore, what is the name of that God? One of the names of God? Raso Vaisaha. He is delight. What a name. Verily, he is delight. And the mother says something very similar. She says, truth is supreme, harmony and delight. So, all people who say, truth is bare heart. Can you bear truth? You say, then it's not truth. Your idea of truth is a harsh, bare reality. That the communist truth, keep it with you. Truth is not just a physical fact or an apparent fact. Truth always brings delight, harmony, completeness, wholeness. It doesn't see things in bits and parts, in totality. And that totality always is so rejuvenating. So this is the background. And he starts with page 248. The passage starts, in a certain sense, matter is unreal and non-existent. That's what we have seen. That is to say, our present knowledge, idea and experience of matter is not its truth. Mother speaks of true matter. We'll talk about it one of the days. We experience it is our limitation. Because our senses cannot, there's the limit of the senses. Very easy to understand. Our senses can see only within a narrow band of frequency. Our ears can hear only within 20 to 20,000 hertz. Now imagine if our eyes and ears and just the senses could experience everything that is there as reality. Won't our experience be mind-boggling literally? And people get this taste, not advisable of course, never, sometimes through hallucinogen drugs. When they take LSD, they start experiencing, oh, you can touch light. You can hear light. Synesthesia, all these things. Actually, they enter into an altered perception. But still the perception is through something. But we have a fixed perception of things. And great artists can enter into that state. Of course, for yogis it becomes natural and normal. And they start seeing reality otherwise. So our reality of matter is merely a phenomenon of particular relation between our senses and the all existence in which we move. We are moving in God, but senses can't perceive. This is the whole thing in Prashna Upanishad also. So it is experiencing objects, forms, this, that. So one of the first meditations of life is to see God in everything and everywhere. Because it's only the mind has to first accept that idea, hammer it, then one day a door opens and then one begins to see. And then everything changes. You can't fight with anyone after that, no, so difficult. You love to quarrel. You see God, problem. So, but that's how. And it's so reassuring. When science discovers that matter resolves itself into forms of energy, it has hold of a universal and fundamental truth. See, forms of energy, we can also say fire. What is fire? Substantial or non-substantial? And when you see fire, it creates forms. And then it just collapses or finishes. It's interesting. What is fire? We know it is energy. And we know it is light. But fire is the first where you see this kind of form. Air, forms of air you cannot see. But still, people can, when they take a picture or sometime when it takes the form of tornado or hurricane, you can experience the phenomena. So all this science has discovered. When philosophy discovered that matter only exists as substantial appearance to the consciousness and that the one reality is spirit or pure conscious being, it has hold of a greater and completer, a still more fundamental truth. God has become all this that is. And it's very logical. We say God made the world. So made from where? You say he took mud. So mud is another reality from which he took. So there was already mud somewhere and he took up the mud. So that means there are two realities, not one. One of God and the other of matter. But if there is only one reality, then the mud and matter must have also come out of him. So that's what the Rig Veda speaks of the Purushyagya. That he became all this. Brihadaranyak speaks about all this material creation like the giant horse. So it is he who has become all this. So reassuring. And that is the great truth which India always had. That in a stream of water you can discover God. In an idol of stone, you can discover God. In a human being, much more difficult, but you can discover God. In a snake, you can discover God. In a cow, you can embrace God. All is God. This is the ultimate truth. So this was Bhumata. She is a living goddess. Why? Because God has become all this. Then the question he takes up, okay, this we take it, accept it. But still the question remains, why energy should take the form of matter and not of mere force currents? Or why that which is really spirit should admit the phenomenon of matter and not rest in states, velleities and joys of the spirit? And there he brings in it because of the mind. So mind again goes to cosmic mind. So the question is, why cosmic mind is doing it? We've already spoken about it. A veil of ignorance had to be thrown to create individualities. Remember the magnet. There has to come something between the magnet and the iron. Otherwise there will be no iron. So veil comes. That's the higher hemisphere and the lower hemisphere. And the veil is so strong, that many have mistaken the veil to be the divine. The overmind gods and the overmind consciousness. So he describes that. We must conclude then, next page, page 249, that there is a universal mind subconscious to us in the form of the universe, or superconscious in its spirit, which has created that form for its habitation. And since the creator must have preceded and must exceed its creation, this really implies a superconscient mind, which by the instrumentality of a universal sense creates in itself the relation of form with form and constitutes the rhythm of the material universe. So this is how God has created, or the divine consciousness is created. There is a universal sense through which the divine experiences things. After all, we say divine is in everyone and everything. How does he act? What is the operating system he uses? Does he come here and acts in me, then go somewhere else and acts in somebody, sorts out people's problem? No, he doesn't do that. Simultaneously, when he acts in me, he acts on every point that is connected with me. And everything is interconnected, so he acts on all the points. It's so beautiful when we come to think about it. So this is what he is revealing to us. But this also is no complete solution. It tells us that matter is a creation of consciousness, but it does not explain how consciousness came to create matter. And he takes us to a very interesting conclusion. Existence is in its activity a conscious force, which presents the workings of its force to its consciousness as forms of its own being. Wow. Conscious force is the divine mother. Let's put it in that way. So divine mother holds in her heart the pure existent. But that existence is without name or form. So what does she do? She creates form and name for that soul existent. Infinite names, infinite forms. Why? Because he is on a path of self-discovery. Through all of us, as the mother says, the world is an objectification of the divine. And it is so true at every level. What we see in the world, because we are mini, mini, chinna, chinna divine, unfortunately or fortunately, but through the mind. So what we see in the world is what we carry within. If somebody is seeing darkness all around, as somebody went to a doctor, says, I cannot see. He says, do you realize you are wearing very thick sunglasses? Take them off, you will see. So if you are seeing darkness everywhere, in everything, everyone, we need to get our eye checkup, divine eye checkup. And he gives very nice solution. Anjana, the kajal, surma. We begin to see well. Why? Because it cleanses us. See what happens when you put kajal? There is cleansing. So we go through the purifying suffering. We discover darkness is inside us. Then all the kajal. Then we discover the joy. Then we see everything is beautiful. Everything is nice. So these are the three stages of our growth. And since force is only the action of one soul existing conscious being, whose force is it? The Supreme's force. Its results can be nothing else but forms of that conscious being, substance or matter, then is only a form of spirit. The appearance which this form of spirit assumes to our senses is due to that dividing action of mind from which we have been able to deduce consistently the whole phenomena of the universe. So it's so beautiful. Everything is divine. It takes a certain form because this is the arrangement between our senses and the reality. If this arrangement changes, things will be very different. Ask an ant about an elephant. There's no elephant. But ask a human being, he will say, yes, there is an ant and an elephant. Because we have developed, the mind has developed to conceive of, perceive these two realities. Ask a yogi, he will say, there is nothing else but divine. We have that story of Chote Narayan ji. There was a man who was known as Pagla Baba in his village. So people used to say, he's Pagla. Some would say, no, no, he's Baba. So one day somebody, he went after him. He was 15, 16 year old child. And people would say, don't go near him. He's a dangerous fellow. Pagal hai na? I don't know. People may be talking like this about many of us. I don't know. So he goes and he stops him. He stops. He says, ah, kya hai bachcha? What you want? He says, aap pagal hai ki baba hai? Direct. He was very straightforward, bluntly straightforward. Are you mad? Or you are a sage? He kept quiet and he says, Baba hai. I'm a sage. So he asked him, Bhagwan ko dekhe hai? Have you seen God? He said, after a pause, is there anything else to see? Now Chote Narayan ji had a shock. This man has something he has realized. So he asked him, can you show to me? I'm forgetting his age, Chote Narayan ji. Definitely around 15, 16 or 20, I've forgotten now, but not. Can you show to me? He said, no, this is not your path. Mera path par koi nahi chal sakta hai. He was an ascetic, like he's grown mad. This is to my, mera path, what will be is my path? He said, already your guru is there who is taking you on the path. He says, my guru, I have no guru. He smiled and said, you will find. He said, how do you know? He said, your guru is there, I can see him. Your master is already there. And then after a few months, all that story, how he discovered. So there is another kind of seeing, subtle vision, divine vision. We don't have that. That's what Krishna reveals to Arjun. That there is another way you can look at things. Right now we cannot. It will be disorienting. So things are the way they are arranged. But in the next level of evolution, they may be very different. So this is one of the things that he reveals to us. Then comes this question, but why this phenomenal and pragmatic division of an indivisible existence? It is because mind has to carry the principle of multiplicity, we are on page 250, to its extreme potential, which can only be done by separativeness and division. Because command of God, I want to be many. Okay, how many? He doesn't have number. Infinity. Okay. It creates infinitesimal. It's going on. Infinitesimal. As many, and there is no limit to it. And it's only possible when it keeps on fragmenting. How many? And that's where we understand the multiplicity, the principle of multiplicity. Why it is there, all this Aurobindo explains. There is not a question that he leaves unanswered. But in successive chapters. Right now he is only asking us to consider matter. Also, the appearance of substance which offers itself to the contact of mind a stable thing or object in an abiding multiplicity of objects and not of substance which offers itself to the contact of pure consciousness as something of its own eternal pure existence and reality or to subtle sense as a principle of plastic form freely expressive of the conscious being. This he will explain in the ascending order of substance. So we can hold for that. That the same thing can see how divine he can literally in one go take the whole universe within himself. That's how Arjun experiences the whole cosmos within him. That is one truth. There is another reality that we experience. So, all of these have to be understood in simultaneously, but Sri Aurobindo wants us first to understand matter has been created, what it is, this extreme fragmentation for multiplicity, and to give it that sense of hardness, concreteness. That is the fit material to work upon. We can understand with a very simple example. So if you have to make an idol of God, so what material you would use? Space, primal ether. Then Lord will say, ha ha, Duryodhan, bandh mujhe, janjeer badi kya laya hai, ya dekh. To pehle desh ko bandh, he will say, nahi sir, something more tangible, air. So if somebody makes God in air, then he will say, it's all your personal, airy fairy, hawa hawai. We make, no, mind makes images like that. It has its own images. It's not something which you tangibly you can. Then what we can make out of fire. So many people, because fire is the first principle where some concreteness can come. So we have fire worship. But again, very difficult. Then can we make an image out of water? Maybe we can, fountains, but again, it will collapse. But come to earth, there is this idol. That's the beauty of matter. It creates difficulty, but also gives solidity, concreteness, the sense that yes, there is an idol, distinct than all the rest. To a deeper vision, the vigraha of Ram Lala, the bhaktas, they are all one. But then, the joy of multiplicity is not there, for which this creation has been made. So this is why it is so. And then he speaks about the apprehensive consciousness, the two minds, the divine mind on page 251. In the divine mind, there is immediately or rather simultaneously another movement or reverse side of the same movement. This is the Vidyamay Maya. An act of union in being, which heals this phenomenal division and prevents it from becoming even for a moment solely real to the knower. That we see in the story of the avatars. On one side, they are experiencing life as it is. But when it goes to a point, like when Mata Sita goes into Prithvi, so Ram goes through a lot of inner sadness. And he is so furious, he says, I'll destroy the earth, which has swallowed my Sita. Then Vishnu and, you know, Brahmaji and Shiva comes and says, but you are Vishnu. You are the giver of the law. Then he sees and he says, oh, okay, I realize. She is not gone. She is waiting for me in Vaikuntha Lok. So the whole perspective changes. So that's how the Leela goes, unfolding. Otherwise there will be no multiplicity, no action, no world, no creation at all. So there is the divine mind where both are there. So the people understand, Rama understands. This is the Leela of Sita, her work is over and she is my Janki, she is there waiting as Ma Lakshmi, all this is known. So that's the divine mind. But then there are people who say, oh, this is so anti-feminist. This is, what is it called? I am forgetting the term. Ramayana is all male chauvinistic. Poor Rama is going at into forest because of one lady's kaikai and mantras that they don't see. They see one incidence. For his lady, he goes all the way and fights Ravan. Every time there is a lady for whom Ram has to do so many things that they don't see. But to Rama, there is no problem. Because Ram knows, Ram and Sita are inseparable. Mother says that when Sri Aurobindo physically withdraws, then she says, to us it's so easy to be in the consciousness of immortality and mingle and merge. But that's not what we are here for. So she has to turn back towards creation and identify with us, come partially, just like us. But always she is holding that deeper truth inside her. So this is the divine mind. But few lines below, this act of conscious union is that which is represented otherwise in dividing mind obtusely, ignorantly, quite externally, as contact in consciousness between divided beings and separate objects. Deep inside, we also somewhere are aware, because always behind the supermind is there. How do we join? We have to come in contact, physical contact, material contact, go through all the difficulties, struggle, finally realize a kind of union, makeshift union. So this is the whole story. Divine mind, it's already realized. But to the dividing mind, it has to be realized. It is seeking for that because it knows oneness is behind. So the difference is, page 252, substance then as we know it, material substance, is the form in which mind acting through sense contacts the conscious being, of which it is itself a movement of knowledge. What a lovely line this is. So beautiful. So what is material substance? It is the form, okay, in which mind acting through sense, what is it trying? Contacts the conscious being. Replace the word conscious being by divine, of which it is itself a movement of knowledge. So divine has brought this mind, this matter, and what is mind trying to do through the contact? Actually, it is trying to reach the divine. But through this process, and so beautifully Mother explains what is love. Love is not sexual intercourse, love is not emotional interchange, not vital interchange, love is not emotional dependency. What is love? She says, it's a mighty vibration that comes from the one and goes to the one. Its circle is complete only when one can discover the divine in the person you love. That's its very purpose. And it cannot be till you have discovered the divine within. So this is the whole circle. So this is how mind is trying to do that. Okay, then toward the end, he speaks of ether theory, which till today we have not actually completely given up, because it's very difficult to understand. But there was a time when people said this ether basically means anatomic extension. So what is space? Space is ether. So there are no atoms there, nothing. It's an extension in which things are, it's like a stable ground on which things are developing. Now scientists say, no, it's a vacuum in which forces are building energy. But even Einstein spoke about, he has his own specialized theories of ether, because it's very difficult to understand. Suddenly atoms dancing in nothingness, coming out of nothingness. So ether, but ether is very difficult to prove. Actually, it cannot be measured, because it's not yet taken, forms are not there. You can measure a form, but what precedes form cannot be measured. So he speaks about ether passingly. But toward the end, he says on page 253, last paragraph, therefore we arrive at this truth of matter, that there is a conceptive self-extension of being which works itself out in the universe as substance or object of consciousness. Being here is, there is the divine who is, when he conceives, he extends. Like conception means this, conceive. But this conception must be realized. That's why Mother says the new creation is not just a conception. Conception is the first step. He extends himself all around. That's how the Veda describes. And he goes all around. Where all? And there is no end to it. So he is. But then he wants to see what is inside him. Objectivize himself. So there is substance. And then there are forms. Of which, as substance or object of consciousness, and which cosmic mind and life in their creative action represent through atomic division and aggregation as the thing we call matter. So basically, that one being extends himself, wants to objectivize. Who will do it? Supermind. So supermind is ready to do it, sends an apprehending consciousness, but in supermind, multiplicity is always subordinated to unity. That's a big difficulty. Difficult to remain individuality is there because there is merging going on all the time. So what it does is, it out of supermind, mind comes as a principle of ignorance. It's like in a factory, that's the best example one can give, not the best though. So there is the owner who has a conception. He has a conception. He wants to have something. So next level, what does he do? He appoints the CEO. The CEO now understands. Okay, fine. So up till the CEO, there is no problem. Then he appoints the MD. So MD will now, he has to manage. So he appoints managers. Managers appoint others. What is happening? The original conception is of the owner. By the time managers and workers, things begin to alter. So after some time, the owner says, you know what? Let's try it again. That's pralaya. Why? Not because owner has a problem. You have to have intermediaries and the intermediaries are a problem. So this time, that's why Mother says, with this incarnation of Maha Shakti, she is the supreme, first vibration of the supreme. So she has impact on all the worlds, on the gods, titans, everybody is taken on board. She had to do this. Because otherwise the creation tends to each of these, gives his own little twist. So when Ganesh has to create, he has to have a, you know, creation where there is everything is laddu and, you know, masti. No obstacle, of course. But if Shiva has to create, you see, he'll say, you have to die, then come to me. Bhasm lagao. You're not allowed. And when Vishnu creates, lavanyamayi, beauty, harmony. Because he's after all, Lakshmi is by his side. You see, even gods, when they create. So this becomes a problem. And all their gana. See, when Shiva orders, just go and see what has happened in Prajapati's yagya. Whom does he send? Virbhadra. He is a Rudra, you know, thinking. So Rudra goes there, Shiva's order. So what does Rudra do? He destroys left and right and center. Nobody is left. So Prajapati prays to Vishnu, you had promised that you will save me always. He says, are you crazy? Don't you see? This is not Rudra, it is Shiva's force. Shiva I could explain, but not Rudra. So still he fights because it's his. But he cannot, because he is like one man army. He is on a mission. That's how it is. When Shiva comes later on, he first cries and then people say, sir, please see what your Virbhadra has done. He has beheaded Prajapati. There is a lot of chaos. Hey, okay, fine. He doesn't say anything to Virbhadra. That was his job description. He says, okay, fine. I'll fix this problem. Divine surgeons fix the head of any head on, you know, on Prajapati. They fix the head in the reverse way. Goat's head. Shobindu quotes this story while describing a political party, which again I am not going to name. The only hint is there was only one in 1900. So the ultimate thing is that, see, there are intermediaries and each of these intermediaries is on a mission. They do what best thing. Hanuman, he burns the whole Lanka. He almost stops at taking Sita because he says, no, Lord has not told this to me. There must be a par-. And Sita Mata also refuses because she understands that he is going overboard. So he says, come, I'll take you. Say, no, hold on. He will come because he knows many things have to happen. So this is why things happen. But ultimately, this is the truth of matter. Mind and life are intermediaries created to contact. But this matter, like mind and life, is still being or Brahman. how, few lines below, and however brute and void of sense it seems to us, it is yet to the secret experience of the consciousness hidden within it, delight of being offering itself to this secret consciousness as object of sensation in order to tempt that hidden Godhead out of its secrecy. Brahmeva Brahma Arpanam. This is what it means. The joy of offering to the divine. It is the divine's. We know that. But don't take away my joy. He has created this play. So when you offer to him, people say, he is the divine eating. Are you fool? That's not important. He can eat without mouth. He has seen it. And then it comes back to us. So what is it when we, before we give it? It is nariyal, it is laddu. Afterwards it comes, it is only one term, prasad. And that multiplies the delight of existence. It is still Brahman. That's why we have this custom of offering to the divine, hidden Godhead. Delight offering itself to its own consciousness as an object. What is this but Sachidananda? Matter is Sachidananda represented to his own mental experience as a formal basis of objective knowledge, action, and delight of existence. So we'll stop here and continue tomorrow with the knot of matter. Jema.